What up, Long Beach? It's JJ.
And Mike.
And Tyler.
Welcome back to your home for local sports, local news, and everything Long Beach. We've got a special edition of our podcast this week because we caught up with Chase DeYoung, a kid we covered at Wilson High School in Blair Field, who was just in the American League Championship Series with the Houston Astros after he thought he might never play baseball again. Mike, how many times did we sit there, watch Chase just absolutely deal at Blair Field and be like, one day this kid's going to be in the show?
Oh, man, one of our favorite kids ever. I think we first talked to him when he was an eighth grader on that Whaley Pony team, and then obviously had such a sensational career at Wilson. Pitched 10 innings of no-hit baseball. I was about to say a complete game shutout. It was 10 innings of no-hit baseball in a game that he lost for Wilson. One of those guys that you've got tall tales about, but also we've been there with he and his family through some of the real highs and lows. We were there with him when he was drafted in their house, several Century Club banquets, both as he's created a scholarship to give to Long Beach kids and also as he's been an awardee. Just a special guy and always great catching up with him.
This podcast and everything that we do at the562.org would not be possible without the support of our title sponsor, Naples Rib Company. They are currently open for outdoor dining and takeout. So get down to Naples Rib Company on Naples Island, right on 2nd Street, and tell them that the562.org sent you down there.
So without any further ado, we're going to bring on our guy, Chase DeYoung, the Clayton Kershaw of the Moore League, because he never got any run support, and everybody was rooting for him really, really hard. What's up, Chase? How you doing, man?
I'm good, especially after that player comp.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad at all. I like that, JJ.
did you get a chance to watch Game 6 last night?
Yeah, I did. I caught it. Obviously, played in that organization. Still have a lot of buddies up there. Super stoked for a lot of those guys to be able to have those crowning achievements. Kersh, obviously. I think that solidifies the whole resume for Cooperstown, obviously. But just really happy to see that group of guys get it done. I'm happy for them. If it couldn't have been us, I'm happy for them.
Well, we were just talking about kind of your crazy road over the last few years and then getting called by the Houston Astros. So where were you on August 3rd when you got that call up from the Astros?
I was in Sugar Land, Texas, where I was playing for the Skeeters. That they made what was called the Constellation Energy League, and it was four teams composed of 25 to 28 guys. We were playing there for an opportunity to get scouted and picked up and signed out of there because we all knew that teams – were going down with injuries. They were getting positive COVID tests. Like, they needed bodies, and the minor leagues wasn't happening. So we essentially put ourselves out there, and competed against each other. I did a call with them earlier, and I think it was like 40% of the guys had major league experience, like when we first showed up on those rosters. So it was a good competition playing against guys. And then we were kind of the only show in the country, so we had a lot of scouts from organizations, and guys were getting picked up out of there quite a bit.
I wanted to ask you about that moment. You're married, you're a few years into your career, and I think that's a moment when a lot of guys struggle with that decision to, okay, do I get the insurance broker license, or what's the next step, or am I staying in it and trying to continue my playing career? And, you had faith in yourself, and you went out there and you stayed in it, and it paid off. You got back up to the major leagues. You're on an ALCS roster. So was it hard to decide whether to do that or not? Or did you just know, man, until the tires fall off, I'm driving this thing and trying to get back up to the show?
Dude, you're spot on. Those were conversations that I was having with myself. And then ultimately at the end of 2019, because 2019 was bad. Like, I was up for a week with Minnesota, but just really battling some demons mentally. Physically I was fine, but I just wasn't a good pitcher in 2019. Ultimately got released, went to Sugar Land, kind of found myself a little bit again, but didn't really do great. Came home and, had to sit down with my dad and with my parent, like with my mom too, talk to my wife, like, we definitely had that conversation, like, okay, like, is it time to get a real job? Is it time to, be done with this? And I knew I still had game left, but, I put myself in a, a really rough position. Like, I was out of baseball. I got relief. I was a second rounder in 2012. And then you know, 8 years later, you know, I was out of the game, and it came to, you know, rock bottom where I was like, all right, like, cause, I mean, I'm a smart guy. Like
and you're self-aware too. You know what I mean? You're smart, but you're also not just like, well, this is the only thing in the world, you know, like, yeah. Right.
And it's not like, I know I could transition into a professional setting of some other kind and succeed. I know I could do that. I've made connections, you know, all over the country that, I mean, frankly, I've been told like, hey, like go play as long as you want. And then when you're done, like, I want to hire you. But I sat down, I was like, no, I'm not done yet. And the off season of 2019, you know, had a couple teams that were the company line I was getting was, you know, that's an interesting name, DeYoung. Yeah, we'll think about that and circle back. But nobody wanted to give me a job. And, you know, I was working hard. I was, you know, I kind of isolated myself. I usually went and worked out with other guys in my agency down to Aliso Viejo, this and that. Thankfully, Andy Fee was able to let me get into the pyramid. So, I mean, I was working out by myself in the pyramid from 9 to 11 every day and really pushing myself, because I knew that, you know, my faith and my family and my support system were able to put me back together, but I knew what was required of me to get back to the level I knew I could play at. And I went to Long Beach State every day, busted my ass in the gym, got myself stronger, you know, went out, was able to work out with the Dirtbags, and Coach V was awesome for letting me get out there and work with guys. And I mean, they really gave me an opportunity to come back, and, you know, was able to do that. Then the pandemic hit, you know, now we don't know what baseball is going to be like. So the only job offer I had was going back to Sugar Land. So I took that. I said, you know what, that's my in. I'm going to play. I'm going to perform. But then, you know, the lockdowns and stuff happened, and I couldn't get into the gym anymore. I couldn't find a throwing partner. Dude, I had these 1 and 2 pound plyo balls, and I threw them against the side of the 405 freeway that comes up to my neighborhood. I rode my bike there, and I played catch with a wall for 6 weeks. And, dude, I built arm strength. I taught myself how to use my hips because I was able to, you know, have that time where nothing was happening. So instead of sitting at home just hoping, oh, maybe baseball will happen, I was out there grinding. Like, and I had no, you know, solid job offer or anything. It was just like, hey, if you get to Sugar Land, you can pitch here and hopefully you get, you know, picked up out of there. But I'm not making, you know, money to support my family or anything there. I'm you know, I'm just working hard for a possibility at getting back. It benefited me greatly because in teaching myself how to use my lower half better, like, dude, I throw hard now. My velo went from over 8 years in the minor leagues. I think my average fastball was like 89. This year, I don't think I threw a fastball under 92. Like, I was 92, 94, touching 95. And it was because I had that time during the lockdowns where I was like, you know what? No, we're not done. And we're going to push through this. I can vividly remember telling myself every day when I was in my backyard, you know, using a cooler full of water as weights, doing prison workouts in the backyard, throwing weighted balls against the side of the highway. I kept telling myself, I'm in the middle of writing one of the greatest comeback stories, and I'm going to do this. And I told myself that every day.
That's amazing. So you were kind of surprised when you got the call from the Astros?
Not really, because when I went down there, my first couple games, like, I was dealing. And quite frankly, like, I would look back at the board, the radar gun, and it would say, like, oh, 92, 93, 94, touching 95. And I just kept thinking, like, that's not me. Like, that gun's wrong, whatever. Like, I'm getting good swings. I'm striking out a bunch of guys, but that gun's wrong. Like, I guarantee you it's 91. And then all of a sudden, like, we got on the track, man, and we got on, you know, scouts are talking. They're like, no, like, your velo's up. Like, you're consistently 93, 94. I was like, dang. So then, you know, I owned it. I remember calling my dad. I was like, Dad, it's still there. Like, the velo's still there. I'm a week into this, and, like, it's not going away. And he's like, dude, I think it's yours. Like, I think, you know, you worked for it, and now you own that. And sure enough, and, I mean, I was dealing. I remember – I struck out 9 guys in 4 innings and then 10 guys in 5 innings.
Wow.
And then I remember thinking, like, wow, like, this is legit. Like, my breaking ball was nasty again. My fastball's got really good life. And it came down to there were three teams that were in it. It was Houston, Detroit, and the Mets. They were all interested in signing me. And then it got into, like, the bidding war. And that was kind of the first taste of, like, free agency I had where I got to, like, pick the best offer. And ended up going to Houston. And the cool thing was, is, like, we were in Sugar Land, which is 35 minutes outside of Houston. So that night, we agreed to terms with the Astros. I was talking with my agent. And we agreed to terms at, like, dinner time, 6:30. So I'm stoked. Like, dude, my health insurance from the year prior with the Twins lapsed. So I got me and my wife there, and like, I don't know what's going to happen. 2 days after that, we agreed to terms with the Astros. Okay, that night, I'm going to bed. I'm like, man, this is great. Probably going to go to the alternate site. Like, I got a physical tomorrow. They call me at 10:30, and they're like, hey, your physical is at Houston Methodist tomorrow, 6:45. Don't be late. You're on a flight at 3 o'clock to Oakland. You're joining the team on the taxi squad. I was like, holy crap. And dude, credit to my wife. When we were packing for the Sugar Land season, she brought my suit and she goes, you're going to need this because I have that much faith in you that you're going to get back. So like brought my suit with me. Incredible.
That's awesome.
So yeah, ended up going, meeting the team on the road, on the taxi squad, came back to Houston after that road trip, went to the alternate site, and I was throwing, and I was throwing well. I mean, the ball was coming out great. They really liked all the numbers and everything. And then went up on the next taxi squad, which I was Colorado, San Diego. Last day in San Diego, got my contract purchased. And I just remember I was just at a loss for words. And I called Chrissy, I called my dad, and I was just like, I'm back. Like I did it. And it was the coolest feeling. And then a couple days later, we're at home playing the Angels. And you know, I get called in out of the bullpen. I threw my 2/3 of an inning, did well. And I remember sitting there on the bench that inning, and I just looked up like, you did it. Like, you busted your ass. You grinded your way back. And in a year of so much uncertainty, like, you just got back for parts of 4 years, four consecutive years in the
business. I mean, we're all just sitting here, you know, grinning our asses off, obviously. I mean, we've known you since you were very young, and certainly not surprised that, you know, we certainly knew you had the talent, but not surprised that you had the heart and the mindset to make it back. But, you know, man, you said it. Sports is filled with all kinds of Cinderella stories that are, you know, we talk about Clayton Kershaw or the ones that are, you know, on billboards, you know, constantly. But I think there's so many great stories like yours where it's like, that's a championship story right there. You know what I mean? It's not a 30 for 30. But that's everything you'd want to hear that an athlete or a person was able to do. And so, you know, congratulations, man. We were all so happy for you that you got back. So it's awesome. Even if it was with the Astros, by the way.
Believe me. Okay, I really like this organization and the pitching side of it. Like they're so good at developing pitching and helping you understand what your best tools are to go after guys. So I really like being in this organization, but being from Long Beach, I got probably, you know, 15 texts. I think a couple of you guys were one of them that said, hey man, really pulling for you. Always going to be a Chase DeYoung fan. Hard to root for the Astros. And I was like, I understand.
Well, and for you specifically, I mean, people may not know this, but you made your big league debut at the Astros in Houston.
I did.
During that 2017 season, which is a controversial season, we can say. But, you know, was that kind of surreal for you to have this you know, great moment in your life and your career to make it back and then have it be with that organization of all places? Like, what was that thought process like? Yeah.
It was weird. Like when they called and they were showing interest a couple of days prior to signing me, I was like, oh man, the Astros, like, dang. And I can tell you this because I've actually come to have a pretty good relationship with them. But when I walked into that clubhouse in Oakland, I gave myself 3 days before I introduced myself to George Springer. and I just said what's up, and like we were cool and everything like that. He's like, hey man, like welcome, like happy you're here, this and that. So then we were back in Houston, and a guy who's become a really good friend of mine, Brooks Raley, who came over, like I was telling him, I was like, yeah, man, I actually debuted against here. And, you know, I'm the first pitcher in Mariners history to get walked off in their debut. And Springer got me here in the Crawford box.
Barely.
Yeah. It was like 340 feet to left center of the 30 ballparks. It gets out in one. And so we're coming in from BP that day, and George is coming out to do a little extra work in the outfield. And Brooks goes, have you told him? I was like, no. And he goes, I'm going to break the ice for you. Man. So he goes, hey, George. And we're standing there. He goes, do you know you walked him off in his debut? And George kind of looks like that side eye look. He's like, yeah, I knew, but I wasn't going to talk about it. And it was just, it was funny. And George came up to me. He's like, all right, dude, like straight up. He goes, it's the cheapest home run I've ever hit in my life. That's and nice. Bregman came up and goes, did you give him so much crap for that? We're like, dude, that's a pop-up and you're going to just do that. And it was, so we had a laugh about it.
That's obviously good.
Yeah. The Astros and I, prior to this year, we didn't have great history. Now I'm thankful to be a part of the organization.
Beautiful.
That schedule that you walked into must have been absolutely nuts. I mean, obviously the baseball season in and of itself in a regular year is crazy. You guys are just going hotel to hotel on these long road trips. What type of schedule were you keeping when you immediately kind of just landed and were off?
Yeah, well, the taxi squad thing, like I made every single taxi squad trip from the day I got signed till, you know, the end of the season. So every time the team went on the road, I would go with them. But anytime they were home and I wasn't active, I had to go to the alternate site, which for us was in Corpus Christi, which that's a 3-hour drive.
It's not close.
So like I was wearing out that highway, living out of the Best Western. Christy was coming with me. She's a trooper, man. She did awesome this year, but I was all over the place. And, you know, then, you know, you meet the team, you got to fly, you fly with the team. Twice I met the team in Oakland because they didn't take me on the initial team flight. So then I get to the hotel. I have to take my own car. I have to get rapid tested outside the stadium 3 days in a row. You know, it happened. I pulled dealing with way worse and more inconvenient things than me having to get a Q-tip shoved up my nose 3 days in a row. So yeah, it was a crazy schedule, but hung in there, got my frequent flyer miles, and, you know, we're good.
Well, and you guys, you were sitting there for game 7 of the ALCS, a game away from the World Series, but also you're in a kind of a bubble. You know, what was that experience to have such a high stakes game in such a different environment? I mean, walk us through just being at the ballpark for these high pressure games as the Astros tried to make that historic comeback down 3-0.
I was there in Minnesota. I was there in LA. And then, you know, I got activated for San Diego, and it was still the playoffs. I mean, I'd never been to the playoffs regularly, and I can only imagine what the atmosphere would have been like with fans. But I can tell you that, like, those were more important than any other game I'd ever been at, and more important. Like, you knew just in the air, like, something was on the line. And when we went down 3-0, nobody in that clubhouse panicked. Like we closed the doors. Breggy was talking, Correa was talking, and these guys, I mean, I can remember Correa saying, like, hey, there's one team that's done this before us, and everybody in this room knows that we can be the next team to get back from it. And then we win the next 3, and that was the coolest thing I've ever seen. I mean, to go down 3-0 and then win 3 straight games in the ALCS, and I'm sitting there in the bullpen, like, ready to cover my innings every single time. I'm like, every other inning, I'm getting up, I'm stretching. I'm, you know, moving a weighted ball around. I got this little massage gun, like, making sure, like, hey, like, everything's loose. I'm good to go. And every time that phone rings, you know, there were nerves, but it was all hands on deck because it was 7 games in 7 days, which is why they activated me, because you needed arms. And every time that phone rang, I mean, you're looking down, and I told myself, like, you want this to be you. Like, you want to go in there and do this. Like, it's just – that was the coolest atmosphere I've ever been in, and I wish fans were there because it would have been even more special.
I wanted to ask you about that. I think with the NBA as well as Major League Baseball, like, Pat Riley sort of stirred this up by making the point that, you know, he thinks the bubble championship should come with asterisks. I think when you listen to players, many players have made the point that it was like, actually, this is by far the hardest thing I've ever had to do as a professional athlete. You know, if it's going to be, if you're going to put something on it, maybe it would be a gold star instead of an asterisk. How did you feel about that? I mean, it obviously was different watching at home, but did it feel, I don't know, did it feel like you would think an ALCS would feel, or did it feel just too weird because the fans' situation was so different? Like, what are your thoughts on that asterisk or not conversation?
I don't think you can put an asterisk on it because you still had, you know, the best players in the world out there playing against each other, playing the same game, but there was a piece missing. And it is the fan bases, because that's such an advantage. I mean, you go and, like, I've pitched in Oakland on a weekend, like, those fans get rowdy and your bullpen is right up next to the stands. Like, they'll let you have it.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing in, you come to Houston and play in our place, like, the visiting bullpen feels like a prison. Like, right. It's a box underneath it. There's, you know, chain link.
Right.
And, you know, you close that roof, I remember opening day 2017, like, that place is loud, and you get fans in there. It adds a whole different atmosphere, and you can speculate that maybe some young guys that hadn't been there before might feel more pressure,
right?
But at the end of the day, you got to get that guy out, and you still got to, you know, do your job and stuff like that. So I don't think you can put an asterisk on it, but you definitely know, like, something was missing that year.
I mean, I agree with you. The asterisk thing just seemed kind of, I don't know. I mean, if in Pat Riley's case, obviously, it just seemed like a little bit of sour grapes, you know. But I think, like, I will say, as a Dodgers fan, you're going into game six last night and you're like, boy, I would cut a finger off right now to have game six and seven up 3-2 at home with 60,000 people there. But, you know, at the same time, obviously the games that would have been in Tampa would have been very different for the Dodgers than they were being played in Texas. So I don't know. It's hard to call it, but I agree with you. No asterisks, but acknowledge that it was weird.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody on the planet's going to not think that 2020 is synonymous with a pandemic. So it's like, we know things were different that year. Like, you know.
Right.
So you were talking about watching the games from the bullpen. I mean, that's just got to be amazing. But you also, what, you shagging BP before the games? Like, you're not inactive, right? Maybe some visions of running around Blair Field coming back to you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was out there. I have Rawlings is the company that I get my gloves through, and I had them make me an outfield glove a couple years ago. So I'm out there, you know, with my really nice outfield gloves, shagging fly balls, taking reads off the bat and stuff. And I'll get acknowledged from some of, like, the position player coaches every once in a while. Like, I make a snag in the outfield. They're like, oh, that was D. Like, that wasn't Kyle Tucker out there. That was D. Because it's funny because, like, we're built kind of the same. He's a way better athlete than me. Yeah, I mean, I loved it. I would be out there shagging beeps, doing stuff like that. You got your typical guys that, you know, they'll just get the ball that comes to them, this and that. And then you got the category I fall in, which is power shaggers, which I'm taking live reads. Like, I am doing it. It's part of my cardio. Like, I love it. And it's so much fun. Me and a guy named Andre Scrub, he and I were power shag partners out there. We were getting after it.
That's awesome.
Hey, pitchers are athletes too. Don't let them tell you otherwise.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what's the plan now, Chase? I know you're headed back home, but what do you got coming up?
I'm going to go home, and I'm going to be an uncle. I haven't seen my nieces and my nephew in 5-6 months. I haven't seen my dad in that long, so I'm just really happy. I'm going to be heading home, getting back, spending time with the family, and getting after it, getting ready for spring training.
Golfing. I imagine there will be
golfing,
some golfing.
A lot
involved.
Of golfing.
Yeah.
Whole bunch.
Oh, yeah. Let's get out. Chase, what's your favorite course in Long Beach? Which one are you most excited to come back and play?
We're members at Old Ranch Country Club, so we play there all the time.
I was going to say, I know you're a rat over at Old Ranch. Very frequently at Old Ranch, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if I play you, we got to play Wreck because it's wider. You know what I mean? I got to be able to go left and right a little bit.
Let's do it. Between working out at the Pyramid and going to Dirtbags practice, I would show up at Big Wreck and I would chip and putt, and I would just, because it was free and I wasn't going to pay for range balls or nothing. So I'm just going to go over there. I putted for hours just waiting for those guys.
That's awesome. Only in Long Beach can you be walking by the municipal golf course putting green right. and see a Major League Baseball player. Only in Long Beach.
Yes, for sure, right.
Sorry, a couple people saw me and recognized me. I know Timmy Richards' dad came out there, and like there was like a couple times like, Chase, we're like, yeah, what's up? They're like, oh, because they know, like, okay, I went to that high school, like I played at that
right.
It's like, oh, you're standing right here. It's like, yeah, waiting for practice
in a familiar setting. Yeah,
just making the slow progression, right? Just from Wilson,
killing time,
moving east and south very slowly. Yes.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time, Chase. Obviously, congratulations. What a story! It's our pleasure to tell it, but it's more of a joy to watch it, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.